Welcome to a special WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Last week, more than 700 people attended a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the new 711th Human Performance Wing at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Enjoy this day, members of the 711th Wing and guests. Thanks again for joining in this celebration.
Major General William McCasland, commander of the Air Force Research Lab at Wright-Patt, was just one of the officials presiding over the dedication ceremony for the 680,000-square-foot facility, which will be home to the U.S. Air Force School of Aerospace Medicine, the Human Performance and Effectiveness Directorates, and the Naval Medical Research Unit. Missions being consolidated at the base as part of the Department of Defense's Base Realignment and Closure Directive, or BRAC. Last week's dedication of the 711th Human Performance Wing signals a new chapter for the Air Force Base and the Miami Valley. But our report on the new face of Wright-Patt begins much earlier. Here's Emily McCord.
It's 7:30 sharp outside gate 12A at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. More than 27,000 people work here, and every day, as they drive through the gates, the sound of the reveille welcomes them. You can hear it for miles, and you know what it is, even if you have nothing to do with base life. But the base is an integral part in the Miami Valley, and it's growing. The 2005 base realignment and closure decision brought new missions and 1,200 jobs to the base. They're not all here yet, but let's back up for a moment to where it all began.
The first public part of the BRAC process is the release by the Defense Department of its recommendations for base closures and realignments.
Michael Gessel is with the Dayton Development Coalition. That's the group that spearheaded the community's efforts during the BRAC process to bring the jobs and the people here.
And this release had good news for Dayton, and it had bad news for Dayton.
The good news was that the recommendations from the Department of Defense would bring research missions from across the country and consolidate them at Wright-Patterson, like the 711th Human Performance Wing. The bad news? A group that purchases information technology was slated to go to Boston. What happened next played out like a courtroom drama. In 2005, Congress establishes a BRAC commission. They're the jury. They look at the Defense Department's recommendations and take into account the broader impact of a base closure. Then, they listen to the community's case. Historically, more often than not, BRAC recommendations favor the military. So for Dayton, it was like being in a courtroom where you're guilty until proven innocent. And there was more bad news for Dayton. The BRAC Commission also considered moving the Air Force Institute of Technology, or AFIT, away from Wright-Patterson. It's like the Air Force's graduate school.
AFIT is one of those agencies which is bigger than just the number of jobs. AFIT is our gem. AFIT is our MIT.
So Gessel says the Dayton Development Coalition went to work to protect AFIT and the IT group. They crunched their own numbers, building a case that the Defense Department's recommendations to move these missions were not the most cost-effective.
They were not interested in emotion. They made that very, very clear. They don't care how hard you yell, how hard you scream, or how much you want this. They wanted a facts-based case, and we made that.
Greene County Commissioner Marilyn Reed agrees that a successful numbers-based case was made, but she says it was missing the pulse and the human emotional connection that the community has with Wright-Patt.
You never know fully what goes into a decision. And I believe that everything, whether it be 0.8%, there's always something that's an emotional factor in everything they make.
So she sat at the front row at every commission hearing, wearing her red, white, and blue jacket. And when the BRAC Commission came to Dayton, she helped organize a rally at Stebbins High School to welcome them.
When that band played, when those all-American songs were out there, you knew you had the Midwestern values. It just had all the ringings of a movie. It was beautiful.
Local and state politicians also angled to keep the missions at the base. Former Congressman Dave Hobson with Ohio's 7th District felt it was his job to get the community's story to the Pentagon early enough to affect the outcome.
One of the things the region was able to do was to bring all the political party people. It didn't make any difference whether you were Democrat or Republican. When it came to doing the right thing to maintain the economic base of this area, everybody worked together.
The BRAC Commission heard both of the cases from the Air Force and the Dayton community. Now it was time for their verdict. Again, Michael Gesell for the Dayton Development Coalition.
The Base Closures Commission finally said, okay, Dayton, we agree with you. We don't believe the Air Force. We're going with you. And they overturned that recommendation.
Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is now stronger than it's ever been. The base kept the Information Technology Group, secured the Air Force Institute of Technology, and for the big win, received the new mission of the 711th Human Performance Wing. For WYSL, I'm Emily McCord.
The mission of the 711th is to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of military forces using a combination of education, consultation, and research. Businesses, both large and small, help provide that mission support, but first, they've got to compete for a piece of the economic pie. The technology research being consolidated at the 711th Human Performance Wing at Wright-Patt is the stuff science fiction is made of.
Well, I do love the Batman program.
Tom Wells is the director of the 711th HP Wing, and yes, he did say the Batman program.
I love that because it's technology that's been, you know, really transitioned to the warfighter that's really making a difference in today's environment. That's an exciting program to me.
The Batman Initiative is just one of the technology programs being consolidated at Wright-Patt. Their home will be the new Centers of Excellence for Human Performance and Sensors Research. Unmanned vehicles, spatial disorientation, acoustic research, and centrifuge applications, the list goes on. The jobs are big and require a lot of brain power. Wells says Wright-Patt can't do it alone.
There will be people who support us in research contracts or support contracts that are in that business that will be here. And there always tends to be a spin-off as you start to begin to develop intellectual capital in the area.
That intellectual capital can be found in any number of companies, from local, small, independent contracting firms to companies that operate on a global scale.
And so we tap into the talent we need when it supports the client's mission.
Tom Furman is Senior Vice President for Booz Allen Hamilton, an American company with offices in five countries, employing more than 25,000 people. Furman heads the technology and research support for work already taking place at one of 10 technology directorates at the Air Force Research Lab.
We have a presence in all of the 10 technology directorates and in all of the major locations. And the work we do is engineering work or support of the science and technology programs, the research and development activities of the lab as a support contractor.
Before businesses can offer the kind of support Furman is talking about, they've got to win the contract. Furman says it doesn't matter if you're a mega company with global resources or a small business that may need to partner with other firms. The contract bidding process can be tough.
I think this is the business. Every time there's a competitive bid, it's no small task to find the right strategy, build the right team, write the proposal, and then execute when the job is won.
It's very competitive.
Connie Saudi owns one of the smaller companies aggressively looking for new business from BRAC. Saudi Solution Services, founded in 2001, has just 50 employees. Most of them work out of a small but elegant office space on Research Park Drive, a short distance from Booz Allen. Saudi says businesses have a few things to think about when bidding on a contract.
You know, you're going out and you're bidding, and most of the work right now is lowest cost technically acceptable. So you're looking for how can you keep your overhead costs down, how can you operate on the minimal amount of profit to be able to bid and win the contracts and then get the work to provide good support and provide good jobs for good people.
While the Department of Defense is actually Saudi's biggest client, that hasn't gotten them any new BRAC contracts, but she says she'll be ready when that new business comes through.
I think a lot of folks in Dayton are hanging their hat on, as this work comes to the local area, when you bring people to the community and you bring jobs to the community, then there's other services that come with that. It's going to be invaluable for all of us.
The benefit for any company getting new business from BRAC is that it gives them the potential to grow. Tom Wells says that's more people earning, saving, and spending, the stuff economies are made of.
Then we also have about 200 support contractors as well. Some of those companies aren't headquartered here in Dayton, and so they're moving operations up here to support us. And then there's the 5,000 students a year.
Those students will be part of the new Air Force School of Aerospace Medicine that's relocating to Wright-Patt. As a result of BRAC, billions of dollars will make its way into the local economy. Construction and research contracts, payroll, education, and other indirect services. But the real economic impact will more likely be determined in the years ahead as slices of the economic pie are doled out to a community already hungry for more. In addition to the new missions coming to Wright-Patt as a result of BRAC, historic partnerships are also being strengthened, like the relationship between Wright-Patt and Wright State University, where students and faculty are conducting research to support missions at the base. Here's Juliet Fromholt.
On a sunny day in Fairborn, Ohio, members of the Air Force are joining civilian firefighters and medical students on a simulated rescue mission.
This specifically is a structural collapse, which, oh, by the way, has been further complicated by one of the search planes that was, you know, looking for the site actually went down.
Major John Dorsch helped set up the scenario for this drill at Calamityville. It's an old cement plant that's been converted into a training site for emergency response. Dorsch is one of the chief emergency medicine residents in a collaborative program between Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and Wright State University. Collaboration between the base and the university medical programs isn't new. In the mid-70s, Wright-Patterson and Wright State began a partnership with 9 medical residency programs in the Miami Valley. As a result, when many service members graduate from med school, they do their residency alongside civilian students from Wright State. Dr. Albert Painter is with Wright State's Boonshoft School of Medicine.
They train side by side. Sometimes they have on blue and sometimes they have on scrubs. Or white coats.
The residency program is one part of the partnership between the base and the university. Another part, Painter says, is that a number of Air Force physicians are staff members at Wright State, and soon the Air Force's School of Aerospace Medicine will be another medical partner.
They're going to be new partners for us, and they'll sit around the table with all the residency directors that we already have in terms of new programs, sharing information, being able to share clinical experiences, and so on and so forth.
The School of Aerospace Medicine is part of the 711th Human Performance Wing that's moving the bulk of its operations from San Antonio to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. But human performance doesn't just mean medicine. The Air Force is also working with students in psychology, engineering, even business. And many of those students are thinking about staying in the Miami Valley after graduation.
There's a lot of opportunities around here for the mechanical engineering side of things, and there's a lot of positions for advancement.
Zach Hafner is a third-year engineering student at Wright State. He's working on an aerodesign project for the Air Force that also involves local companies. Hafner says that when it comes to collaboration, creativity is key.
Being able to include creative thought in engineering will help come up with new ideas, new designs. Being able to think critically and logically goes hand in hand with being able to be creative at the same time.
That type of creative, collaborative work is one of the founding tenets of the Wright State Research Institute, which has been working with the Air Force regularly since opening in 2007. Director Ryan Fenley says he's most proud of the Institute's Human Performance Consortium,
which is an Institute-led initiative involving academia, industry, and nonprofit partners, where we've really worked to create a regional one-stop shop where the Air Force can come and tell us, okay, in human performance, these are our big challenges. Now, we want you to go out and find the expertise, given that we don't care where it is, and we don't care who they work for.
The Institute helps find resources for projects. Fenley says they'll find those resources wherever they can, but he's happy to be working with a lot of people in the Dayton region.
When you look at the work or the priorities of the Air Force, a critical mass of expertise actually exists here in the region that the Air Force would have a very difficult time tapping individually. But by bringing that together collectively, we've raised the profile of the capability for the university and the region in this area. And the Air Force goes, ah, wow, there it really is here.
Raising those profiles is important to Fenley because it means students can stay in the Miami Valley and continue their research and their careers. For WISO, I'm Juliet Frumholt.
When military personnel are told their jobs are moving, well, they move too. But civilians working for the Air Force have a choice. And this BRAC has been particularly successful in getting civilians to pack up their homes and relocate their families. Sarah Buckingham continues our report with a look at how some Ohioans brought new faces to Wright-Patt.
Typically, a BRAC will retain 10 to 15% of its civilian workforce. This time, that number doubled. The campaign to encourage civilians to follow their jobs to the Dayton region began back in 2008. Former Governor Ted Strickland and then Lieutenant Governor Lee Fisher released this video.
Facilities are under construction and everything else is in place. And we know that the skills of the workforce needed to staff these centers is the most critical element for their success. And we want to put out the welcome now and invite you to become Ohioans.
Now the construction is complete. People have moved here from Arizona, Florida, and New York, and more are on the way. The bulk of civilians faced with this tough decision came from Brooks City Base in San Antonio, Texas, and they weren't sold right away.
Folks kind of call me the Dayton salesman, I guess. I have been trying to do everything I can to encourage them.
That's Tom Wells, the director of the Human Performance Wing. He says there's a government job placement program for those who decide to stay in San Antonio. But he couldn't be happier with how many engineers and scientists accepted the invitation to Ohio.
A lot of people in San Antonio seem to think this is the frigid north. The weather and snow probably scared them more than anything. And so I showed them beautiful pictures of springtime in Ohio and fall in Ohio. So yeah, I'm a bit of a marketeer for Dayton, I guess.
At first, honestly, heck no. I didn't think I'd move up here.
Elizabeth Escamilla is a molecular biologist. She's spent most of her life in Texas, and she was one of the researchers Wells worked to persuade.
He said, first, he was honest. He said, it's nothing like San Antonio, so don't expect San Antonio. But he said, the weather is great. The opportunities here are vast, definitely slower paced, and you get the four seasons.
Escamilla wasn't convinced yet. Miami Valley officials still had some work to do, so they hit the road. About 90 community representatives, everyone from home builders to university presidents, flew to San Antonio on their own dime. And that two-day trip had a major impact on the number of civilians who chose to move. Beaver Creek City Council member Phyllis Howard was there.
Most of us, we lost our voice by the end of the day. It was really crowded, and it just kept moving and moving and moving. But there was a lot of energy in the room. And at first, folks were just okay about moving, but some, by the end of their 45 minutes or hour that they spent in the room, they had felt more comfortable about their decision to move.
Howard shared a table with the city of Fairborn. She showed people maps of the bike path, talked about local schools, and discussed job opportunities for spouses.
Looking at my children and as a mother, I wanted to make sure that if I had the opportunity to share my experience of living in Beaver Creek with another family, and if that helps them make a huge life decision, I wanted to be there for them.
Elizabeth Escamilla eventually became a Dayton cheerleader herself. She encouraged her teammates to move and even helped them shop for real estate. About half joined her in Beaver Creek. Others settled down in Centerville and Huber Heights.
We're all working together. We're doing the same job. It's just at a different location. You know, and it's kind of like bringing your family with you.
For folks in San Antonio, it meant a lot that the Dayton community cared so much. According to the Dayton Development Coalition, the group that organized the trip, this kind of an effort to roll out the welcome mat is pretty unique. Here's the Dayton Development Coalition's VP for federal programs. His name is Michael Gessel.
The slot moves whether the person moves, so why should we care? Because we're still going to get that job. Well, the answer, why we care, is because it affects the quality of the work and it affects the mission. We obviously care very much about Wright-Patterson's success because a strong, successful Wright-Patterson is a Wright-Patterson that's going to continue to hire people and to be a source of economic development.
So far, the effort to keep Wright-Patt strong has been a success.
But whatever you decide for yourself and your family, we thank you for your contributions to our nation's defense, and we hope to see you soon in Ohio.
For WYSO, I'm Sarah Buckingham.
Ohioans have seen tough times lately. Gone are many of our manufacturing jobs, but the Miami Valley remains true to its roots in aviation and innovation. Our report on the new face of Wright-Patt ends with a look at what we've gained as a result of the BRAC decision and a cautious eye turned to the future. Here again, Emily McCord.
1700 hours. The retreat bugle call is played at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The workday is over.
It used to be when we played retreat, say at 5 o'clock in the evening, people are out there on the golf course, they would ignore it.
Dave Boyer grew up in the Miami Valley. For as long as he can remember, Wright Patterson has been a part of his life. He's a civilian and the chief of the readiness branch in the 88th Air Base Wing.
But now I see people stop, they remove their hat, they turn toward where they think the flag might be. And Wright Pat used to be kind of almost a hidden gem in the Dayton area. I mean, everybody knew it was there. In fact, old people like my parents would call it the field. You work at the field. But nobody really understood, I don't think, what was going on there so much, or there just wasn't a lot of emphasis on it.
Boyer says that's changed now. People recognize the base like they used to recognize NCR, General Motors, and other manufacturing industries that made up the Dayton story for years. Michael Gessel represents the Dayton Development Coalition. He says now, when he tells folks about Dayton, it's a new story with a focus on Wright Pat.
The part that we tell is the vibrancy of the Wright-Patterson community, is the growing science and engineering workforce at Wright-Patterson. And this is every much a part of the Dayton story as the declining manufacturing workforce.
I mean, Dayton suffered dramatically. You know, when you lose half your manufacturing jobs, you know, that's a serious hurt on.
Richard Stock is an economist at the University of Dayton.
The dominant thing that constantly runs through my head is that we've lost half our manufacturing jobs in the last 10 years. And so while the BRAC won't make up for that, every little bit helps.
For now, the Miami Valley stands to reap big benefits from all the new things that are coming to Wright Pat. But undoubtedly, there will be another BRAC. And Gessel says Dayton needs to be prepared.
There are cycles. The strengths of Wright-Patterson today may not be the strengths 25 years from now.
And former Congressman Dave Hobson says, while no one can predict when the next BRAC will be or what will come of it,
it's going to be hard to maintain as good as we did last time. That's going to be the challenge. And I don't want to raise expectations. You know, if we just do what we did last time, we'll be fine. That's not true. We're going to have to figure out what the lay of the land is on this one.
And figuring that out isn't easy. For one, it means knowing what the military's needs will be in the future. And then there's the question of money.
Well, there are no guarantees with BRAC. And as you might have been seeing in the paper, the federal government has got a real budgetary crisis on its hand right now. And trying to save money is a big deal.
Tom Wells is the director of the Human Performance Wing at Wright-Patt.
There is just so much here. The infrastructure and my $230 million new Milcon construction out there, brand new. I don't think we're going to walk away from that too soon. I just don't see Wright-Patt going away in my lifetime.
Trying to predict the next BRAC is a little like looking into a crystal ball. There are going to be a lot of factors that will be going into those decisions. Greene County Commissioner Marilyn Reed feels that the community will have a large role to play.
As we look forward, no one should ever take for granted that the base is a static thing. This is our family. Wright-Patterson is our family, and we're part of their family.
Today, the ties between Ohioans and Wright-Patterson are stronger than ever. The benefits of the last BRAC have created a new narrative for Dayton. Reed and others in the region hope that, in the future, the needs of the base and the needs of the community will continue to align. For WYSO, I'm Emily McCord.
Our five-part series on the new face of Wright-Patt and this edition of WYSO Weekend can be accessed on our website, wyso.org. Here's Sarah Buckingham with a preview of tonight's Moth Radio Hour.
This week, we wrap up the spring season of the Moth Radio Hour. Catch the last episode tonight at 11 p.m. A guard at Sing Sing is intrigued by a prisoner's unusual tattoo, and the Moth's founder, George Dawes Green, shares what happens when his mother learns that her family plantation is going to be turned into a theme park.
The house that my great-grandmother presided over was called Troutland Hall, and it was in Waynesboro, Georgia. And as you entered the foyer, you looked up, and there was this horrifying mosaic of Medusa looking down at you. And then you walked in, and there were these two enormous dining rooms and the ornate library and the staircase that was so grand and went up to the 7 bedrooms and the 5 bathrooms. And on the 3rd floor was the grand ballroom where my mother danced when she was a little girl. And there was a nook in the house that contained what they called the Turkish room, which was for intimate conversation. And when my mother had her sixth birthday, her grandmother led her into the Turkish room. They were both named Inez. And on that day, big Inez gave little Inez a plantation, all of her own. And then her little sister came running in and said, "Grandmother, can I have a plantation too?" And big Inez looked down and said, "Child, your name is Alice. You were named for your Yankee grandmother. Go ask your Yankee grandmother for a plantation."
The Moth is true stories told live without notes. Some stories are emotionally intense and not for children. The Moth Radio Hour is produced by The Moth and Jay Allison of Atlantic Public Media. That's tonight at 11 p.m. right here on WYSO.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the second week of early summer. By this moment in the year, everything is happening all around us. May apples have fruit the size of a cherry. Buckeyes have half-inch burrs. Honeysuckle flowers are falling, bridal wreath and snowball viburnum rusting. Timothy is ripe for chewing. Mulberry season begins for both the red and the white varieties, and it typically lasts until the end of early summer. Good for birds, good for pies. Tea roses and achillea open in the garden, and the first foxtail grass ripples by the side of the road. Asiatic lilies, poison ivy, meadow rue, Indian hemp, and catalpa trees are budding. July's wild petunia foliage is a foot tall. August's boneset has grown knee-high. Canadian geese are molting now that all of their goslings have hatched. Mother grackles and robins are cleaning their nests, often depositing the white droppings of their babies in your birdbath or pond. And it's high time for insects. Time to check the cucumbers for cucumber beetles. The flocks for powdery mildew. Look for potato hoppers in the alfalfa and mites in the roses. Chinch bugs begin to hatch in the lawn. White flies attack azaleas. Weevils attack the yellow poplars. Leaf miners work the arborvitae, the birch, the locust, the boxwood, elms, holly, and juniper. Inspired by all the insects, weaving spiders weave the first major network of cobwebs across the woodland paths. Wolf spiders and toads hunt the fields and forest floor. Birds feast and feed their young. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the third week of early summer. In the meantime, pay no attention to the bugs. Look for mulberries. Make a pie.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this week's edition of WYSO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook. You're listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. WYSO is a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley.
Hi there, I'm Nina Ellis, the general manager of WYSO. I sent you another letter and said, it's the end of our fiscal year, please send us a little money. Here's why. We're taking WYSO to the next level with more local stories and local music and more local people on the air. So please send us a contribution. Do it by June 30th, and you could win a Color Nook e-reader. You don't have to give in order to win, but surely it helps. Thanks.
Celebrate the music of the people, by the people, with the National Folk Festival this week on American Roots. Get in the festival frame of mind in Butte, Montana. Learn the history of the National from former director Joe Wilson and hear over 70 years of great musical moments from Piedmont Blues to Texas Swing and lots more in between. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from American Public Media.
This afternoon at 2 on WYSO.